This is an ABC podcast.
Good morning, this is Pacific Beat on ABC Radio Australia. I'm Richard Hewitt, and in this Friday Sporting Edition, the CEO of the Samoan Union urges Rugby Australia not to back out of Super Rugby Pacific.
The whole concept is to grow the game globally and to improve teams like Samoa, Tonga and Fiji to get into the top tiers and be able to play more regular test matches with Tier 1 nations.
On the brink of Aussie rules football history, the young man from PNG, known as Ace.
Well, that's the dream, isn't it? His last probably 2 months have been exceptional. The best football he's been playing and competing well and playing his role well with the VFL side.
And after more than 2 years in COVID-enforced sporting exile, the New Zealand Warriors are home at last.
Half of our team have never played at Mount Smart. And I always tell the boys that, you know, it's a different atmosphere. You know, our crowd always gets behind us. And I'm just excited to go out there on Sunday and put on a good performance for our fans and our sponsors and our families.
We'll hear more from Toa Samoa international Bunty Afoa on the Warriors' homecoming later in the program.
You're listening to Pacific Beat on ABC Radio Australia.
First, though, and it's been three COVID-riddled years of exile for the Flying Fijians, Manu Samoa and the Akalitahi. They're ready to fight it out now for the Pacific Nations Cup once again. In the interim, World Rugby have changed their rules to allow players of Pacific origin to play for their countries of heritage, even if they have previously played for another country. So when the tournament kicks off in Suva tomorrow, each team will include players who were previously barred from representing their Pacific nation. Ex-All Black Asita Damanivalu will feature for Fiji, and former All Black Sevens player Fritz Lee will be in the blue of Samoa. But it's Tonga who is set to hit the headlines. Israel Folau makes his return to the international scene after he was sacked by Rugby Australia over his social media activity. And alongside him will be two former All Blacks in Marakai Fakatoa and Charles Pietau, English club rugby's £1 million man. Based in the city of Bristol in southwest England, Pietau's journey to the PNC has obviously been a long one, but he says that's true in more ways than one.
It's great to be here finally. It's been a long time coming, and so just to be amongst the boys in the environment, pretty surreal feeling. Still probably pinching myself to think this is actually happening, but really excited to be here.
And what is the atmosphere like within the camp at the moment? Because this is really the start, or it will be, when you take to the field against Fiji at the weekend, the start of a new era for Tongan rugby with the likes of yourself coming into the team, the guys from Moana Pacifica. I mean, so much has changed.
Yeah, I mean, it's my first time, so I think a lot of the older guys know, seen the difference in terms of how much has changed from maybe other camps. But, you know, it's a lot of fresh faces. There's new guys coming in, and I think just for myself, just soaking in the environment, soaking in, you know, being part of the Tongan culture and learning more about the team, the history, and then excited just for the tournament, really, and being able to kick off the Pacific Nations Cup.
On paper, the squad that you're now part of, it looks pretty good, doesn't it? Players with your experience, Marakai, Israel Folau is back playing international rugby. All the guys from Moana Pacifica are pretty battle-hardened after a very difficult season for them, season one in Super Rugby Pacific. I mean, you must be pretty excited about what this squad could do.
Yeah, for sure. You know, there's, like you've mentioned, there's a lot of guys that have experiences has come from other teams, and you know, a lot of the Moana Pacifica boys have got a great experience in the Super Rugby competition this year. And so, you know, I think that's one thing being on paper, but you know, we still got to connect and build those relationships and get that connection right on the field, which we have been doing the last week and a bit now leading into the first test.
It's likely that there will be a lot of attention on you, for sure, but clearly on Israel Folau coming back into international rugby after his problems with Rugby Australia. Is that a concern for you and your teammates, or are you just getting on with the job and let the media do whatever they might do?
Yeah, definitely not a concern for us. You know, we've come into this environment and there's a lot of things that we're building towards this competition, and there hasn't been any talk of that. And so I think we just leave that up to the media.
First up will be the Flying Fijians on home soil. I mean, that's always going to be a tough encounter under any circumstances. Are you conscious of the expectations that are on you and your teammates now within the Akalitahi?
We're aware of it, but you know, it's, like you said, it's a big challenge playing Fiji here in Fiji. And for us, you know, we just want to make sure that we're putting our best foot forward, working together with the coaches, coming up with a plan and making sure that we can perform to our best of our ability. And I think the rest will take care of itself.
And to what degree will the team still be very much inspired about events back in Tonga just a few months ago now, with the volcanic explosion and the tsunami that followed, then COVID-19 struck the country? Of course, you have relatives over there yourself. I mean, is that a big inspiration for you guys heading towards Saturday and how you might play against Fiji?
Yeah, for sure. You know, I think Tonga's been through a lot, and I think if we've even seen what the rugby league team has done, that's bringing a lot of joy to Tongans worldwide, seeing the support that they've had. And I think, you know, from our point of view as well, we'll be stoked to put on a great performance for us as individuals, but at the same time, we know what joy that can bring to a country, and so we are aware of that.
And have any of your family, or might any of your family have the opportunity to be in Fiji for this game, or will they be watching from afar?
Yeah, I've got family members making the trip over to Fiji, so it'll be pretty special. Be pretty happy to have them along the sidelines.
And do you think that allowing for the fact that this is essentially a new squad that's come together, and you have to give a new squad time to gel, but with the talent that is within that squad, do you believe you could win the Pacific Nations Cup?
I think that's always the goal in terms of being part of a team and being in a competition. But like you said, you know, there's a lot of new faces, and it's how quickly can we gel together. But our intentions are to play to win this competition.
And of course, I mean, you have the games to come, first against Fiji, you also play Samoa and Australia A. Then there will be the World Cup qualifying game, which we think is going to be against Hong Kong. It's a chance, isn't it, for the team to actually have a pretty steady build-up to what we hope will be an impactful World Cup next year?
Yeah, for sure. You know, I think in this tournament and the next games leading up into the World Cup are all stepping blocks, and being able to build momentum to peak come World Cup.
Charles Pietau, who will make his senior international debut at last for Tonga when the Akalitahi play Fiji in the opening round of the Pacific Nations Cup in Suva tomorrow. Now, the encounter between the Tongans and the Fijians will be the second match on day one of the PNC, because first up will be Manu Samoa taking on Australia A. The Manu have Fritz Lee from the Clermont Club in France in their lineup. He's been out of the picture since playing sevens for the All Blacks 12 years ago. And a former All Blacks 15 squad member, Jordan Tafoa, is also in the Manu mix for the first time. The chief executive of the Samoan Union, Lakapi Samoa, Vincent Fapuli, Pudiai, says there are more players ready to pledge their allegiance to the Manu for future games, but right now, he's just glad to have the national team back on the park again.
It's been a long time coming. For the last 3.5 years, Manu Samoa have only played 4 games, apart from the qualification in New Zealand last year and 2 matches against New Zealand Maoris. It's been a welcome return for international rugby, and our fans have really been waiting for our team to play. And the new regulations that have come up by World Rugby has been welcomed by all. I mean, especially us, Samoa Tonga and Fiji, which is, you know, with limited numbers of players. It's been really good to call on them to come and strengthen our team. And we're looking forward to those players to come to strengthen our team for Rugby World Cup. And you'll probably see that in the next couple of weeks, not just Samoa, but Tonga as well. And Fiji, with all the experience that they've gained in the current Super Rugby.
Clearly, it's a significant number of players from the Moana Pacifica side have been picked either by yourselves or by Tonga. And they've had a very tough season, that new franchise, for all sorts of reasons. Again, primarily linked to COVID, but just being a new team. So, yeah, you're going to have some battle-hardened troops lining up for the Manu.
Exactly. I think it has been a missing link for so many years. We've had to call on players from Europe who are playing professional rugby over the years, but there's been quite a mix of players too who have come from provincial ITM level competitions and club competitions to mix with those professional players. But now we've got players that have played at super level. It's really encouraging.
In terms of the change in eligibility rules, there's going to be a lot of attention on 2 or 3 of the Tongan players, particularly, of course, to the return of Israel Folau. Charles Pietau, one of the most highly paid players in the world, will be turning out for Tonga. In your case, you have Fritz Lee coming into the side, who plays for Clermont over in France. You have Jordan Tafoa as well, who will also be there under the new eligibility rules. But I'm guessing maybe there are more players, but you maybe just haven't managed to secure their services yet. Would that be right?
Yeah, There's quite a number of players that we're going through that process at the moment for the second half of the year. We'll probably see more coming over during the Northern Hemisphere tour at the end of the year. But those players that you just mentioned, they put their hand up and made themselves available after the regulations have changed. So we're really excited for them to come and represent us.
What do you make of the fact that this is a tournament involving yourselves, Tonga, Fiji and Australia A? What should we read into that? Some people might see that as perhaps a little discourteous on the part of Australia to send their essentially their second 15.
I don't think so. I think this is not new. Over the years, we've had the New Zealand Mariners in the competition and Japan as well. And I guess with the rankings and so forth on a global scale have made things change a little bit. And I think Japan is going up north at the moment, playing a couple of games up there. And I think the ranking has a lot to do with it. But we're hoping to change that going forward. I think there's a lot of talks of new competitions and so forth coming up of the next cycle after the World Cup. So those discussions are ongoing right now with World Rugby and all the major unions.
Are you confident, going back to the Super Rugby Pacific situation, that the current competition will survive beyond 2023? Because, of course, there's talk that Rugby Australia might go their own way, and clearly that could have quite an impact on Moana Pacifica.
Yeah, I hope that the major unions, Australian Rugby and New Zealand Rugby, will do the right thing and include us in whatever competition or any changes or any format that goes on. It's been proven in the last competition that both the Drua and the Moana Pacifica added value to the competition, because I think we play that different type of style of rugby that's entertaining and can draw people to the gates. And not only that, but you have to look at the bigger picture and the overall scale of things, because the Rugby World Cup has remained the same over the many years. It's quite obvious that the same teams get to the quarters. Now, if they don't support us, the game, the whole concept is to grow the game globally and to improve teams like Samoa, Tonga and Fiji to get into the top tiers and be able to play more regular test matches with Tier 1 nations.
Vincent Fapuliai, CEO of Lakapi Samoa, the Samoan Rugby Union, on the line from Apia. And while the PNC kicks off in Suva tomorrow, the Oceania Under-20 Championship starts today in Australia, with New Zealand playing Fiji before the host nation take on guest nation Argentina, with both games at the Sunshine Coast Stadium. And holding the front page for us this morning here on Pacific Beat, it's Kyle Evans. Kyle, good morning to you.
Oh, good day, Richard.
First up this morning, Indonesia. They've passed a contentious law that will create more provinces in Papua. So what have they done? What's been the reaction?
Yeah, that's right. So our parliament has passed legislation, like you said, to create three new provinces in Papua. The decision will see the region, which is currently split between Papua and West Papua, and it will pave the way for five new provinces all up, which will be South Papua, Central Papua and Highland Papua, all to be added.
Now, the government says this decision will do what exactly? I mean, why have they done it?
Yeah, so it's basically done as a plan to help spur development in the region and create more opportunities for Papuans. It's an area which is rich in resources, despite the fact it is one of the country's poorest regions. And the Indonesian Home Affairs Minister says the goal of the legislation is to accelerate development in the area, as well as increase the welfare of the people there.
Now, there's been reaction from human rights sector, notably lawyer Veronica Coleman. I mean, what does she make of all this?
That's right. It has sparked some protests. There's been some low-level independence conflicts in the area, which dates back to the 60s, and critics fear that it could actually wrestle more power away from the area. It is home to one of the biggest deposits of gold and copper, so there is a little bit to fight for there. And an Indonesian human rights lawyer, Veronica Coleman, who I believe has appeared on this show before, she worries that it's actually a plan from the Indonesian government to further conquer Papuan identity.
Further reaction, no doubt, on that decision from the Indonesian government. Now, earlier this week, the foreign minister from Tuvalu withdrew from the UN Ocean Conference. He travelled all the way to Europe and then turned around and came back to the Pacific. Simon Coffey is the man in question. He's put out a statement now explaining more about why he did what he did.
Yeah, that's right. So he's opened up on why he boycotted the event, and it comes after China blocked the credentials of three of Tuvalu's Taiwanese delegates on the grounds that that Taiwan isn't formally recognised by the UN, like you said, leaving the foreign minister to boycott it in what he thought was unfair treatment. However, in his statement, he said Tuvalu is a sovereign country and has the right to compose delegations according to what best suits the nation, and that non-nationals in delegate parties are actually common practice at these types of events.
So what further repercussions might we expect as a result of all this? I mean, clearly he's prepared to stand his ground.
Yeah, he wants to see some reform come into place. So he also said in a statement that it's critical that Tuvalu attends these types of events with the high-level representation that it deems fit. And the UN actually needs to look carefully at this idea that one country can dictate another country's delegation list at an international event. So, yeah, it'll be very interesting to see what comes out of it.
Now, finally, some news from Fiji. Fuel prices on the way up.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, pretty sad today for the people of Fiji, who are about to be banged up at the bowser. New fuel prices will come into effect today. Consumers are set to fork out a fair bit more for petrol, kerosene and diesel. So these prices, they've been determined by the Fijian Competition and Consumer Commission. And we're going to see Motor Spirit increase by up to 36 cents. Premix will increase by 34 cents and diesel will increase by 11 cents per litre.
Not looking good then in terms of the cost of living, and I suppose there will be a knock-on effect.
Yeah, that's right. So, look, we've seen, cost of living increase across the globe. It's no news story there. But yeah, it will have a knock-on effect. Like you said, I think we can expect to see the price of our fruits and vegetables rise in the coming months, just like they have here in other places.
Kyle, thanks very much indeed. Kyle Evans there with some of the stories making headlines across the Pacific on this Friday morning.
On the 1st of July, 90 years ago, ABC Radio crackled to life.
This is the ABC.
On the 1st of July this year, celebrate with us as we take a journey through the years.
Our first broadcast was from studios, originally the dressing room.
This is the Coming Out Ready or Not show.
Yes, thanks very much indeed.
Happy to hear from you as well. The open line is coming your way.
Tuned in, 90 years of ABC Radio.
Oh, wow, we're away.
Friday, 11 a.m. PNG time on ABC Radio Australia.
Something to listen out for later in the morning. You're with Pacific Beat here on ABC Radio Australia for a Friday morning. It's the Friday Sporting Edition with myself, Richard Hewitt. Now, the draw has been made for the group stage of the OFC Champions League to be played in Auckland from August the 9th to the 16th. Our former Solomon Islands captain, Henry Fa'arodo, was on hand to pull the numbers out of the bowls. And OFC's competitions manager, Chris Kemp, made sure all was in order as he explained that this year there are cash prizes on offer for the top teams.
For the first time, this year's competition will include a total of $175,000 New Zealand dollars in prize money to be shared between the top four teams. The losing semi-finalists will each earn $12,500, the runner-up $50,000, and the winner $100,000. And the two groups are as follows. Group A, we have AS Venus, Galaxy FC, Lay City FC, and Central Coast FC. In Group B, Nikko Sokotek FC, Auckland City FC, Yengen Spor and Rewa FC. And we'd just like to wish all teams well in their preparations for the competition. We look forward to welcoming you to New Zealand very soon.
Interesting to see Auckland City, the host team, have won the competition so many times it's hard to count, in the same pool as Yengen from New Caledonia, who are the current champions. They won that title back in 2019. There's been no tournament since. And as well as that $100,000 prize, the winning team will also represent Oceania at the next FIFA Club World Cup, wherever and whenever that tournament may be held, we believe, in 2022, with the world ruling body yet to release any details. Now, the dream to play first-grade Australian rules football is edging closer for Hawaga Oya, better known as Ace. The young Papua New Guinean has been turning heads, playing for the Gold Coast Suns at second-tier level this season. after first grabbing the headlines for his country when they won the International Cup 4 years ago. Now, should he make the final step to the Suns' senior side, no one will cheer more loudly than Aces mentor Ben Drew, the AFL's development officer for the Pacific. And while he still needs to check with the game's historians, Ben says the boy who went through the AFL Academy in PNG could be the first player to reach the top, having learnt his craft outside Australia.
Well, that's the dream, isn't it? He's worked really hard for quite a few years now. I remember when we first brought him down, 15, when we first brought him to move to the Gold Coast and join their academy. He started a fair bit behind everybody else that plays a lot more football, but he's come a long way very quickly. And his last probably 2 months have been exceptional. The best football he's been playing and competing well and playing his role well with the VFL sides. Talked to him a lot. He's really happy and enjoying himself, and it's really showing in his football in the VFL side at the moment. So, fingers crossed, you never know.
Ace has got the free kick for high contact, and this kick will be after the siren to give the Mosquitoes the lead. Huge kick in the context of this game. After the halftime siren.
That's the confidence.
Ace kicks the goal, and Papua New Guinea go to the break in front.
He's a young star, this boy. He had the silky clean hands. He was quick. He was the boy with the dancing feet.
I want to thank, like, FL Kenzie back home and Ben Drew and all my family back home, and especially my mum and dad.
So is there any doubt in your mind that he will make the grade, and maybe sooner rather than later now, after all that hard work that you've talked about?
I would love to see him play. I think it's a wonderful reward, not just for him, but for everybody back home that supported his journey over a long time. And he certainly has done the work, and he's increased his professionalism and what he's doing around the club. So he just needs that chance first, and he's doing all the things he needs to do. It's just a matter of getting it.
There is another young man from Papua New Guinea over in the West, Manfred Kelly, who's already picked up the Prendergast Medal for best and fairest in the Waffle Reserves team, and is now going pretty well, as I understand it, in South Fremantle's first team. Do you know much about him? Because I guess with Asoya doing so well, and now this young man, Manfred Kelly, I mean, this must make your life a little bit easier in terms of promoting Australian rules in PNG.
Yeah, it's watching from afar what Manfred's doing, and I haven't been a part of his journey myself. Him and his family moved over to Perth many years ago when he was in the NGA with Fremantle. But Manfred's been playing very well and in and out of the senior side a bit, and from what I see, he's 19 and making a good impact at South Freo at the moment. So it's quite fun watching him from afar.
So you've got those two guys there who clearly will be standout examples of what a young man or a young woman, for that matter, in Papua New Guinea could achieve if they decided that Australian rules football was for them. And I understand you've been working with a couple of the islanders at North Melbourne, Atu Basunavalangi with his Fijian heritage, and Aidan Corr with his Papua New Guinea connections. I mean, what have they done for you, and how can they help spread the gospel?
Atu and Aidan, as part of our AFL community camps, did some fantastic shout-outs for community volunteers, community umpires and community programs across Fiji and Nauru and PNG and a few other Pacific Islands as well. They were very generous in their time, and the club was great in helping put those together. Through COVID, there hasn't been as much face-to-face contact in the community camps, and it was great that Atu and Aidan were able to support football back home where their family's from. And the guys with the AFL Nauru team were pumped with their video, and they were so excited and so thankful for getting some recognition for all the work that they do. And the video Aidan did was terrific for him, and the Fiji crew similar with Atu's video around Bulla Kick and getting into community football.
Bulla, it's Atu Basunavalangi from North Melbourne Football Club, and we want to see you on the football oval this year. Whether it's playing AFL footy for your local youth or senior AFL team or at your school, we want to see you having fun playing our great game. It's never too late to start playing AFL footy. Whether you know how to mark or you don't, you can learn AFL. Follow at AFL Fiji to find a program near you.
You mentioned COVID. Can you sum up just how big the impact has been in terms of developing Australian rules football around the Pacific in the last couple of years? I know, for example, we were talking to people from Vanuatu quite recently, and everything came to a standstill until literally 3 or 4 weeks ago, yeah, when they were allowed to go out and play again. I mean, it's been pretty tough, hasn't it?
It has been tough, all these isolation rules and everything else, and sport's such a big thing, and to have COVID come through and stop life as it was for a little bit there. It makes it very difficult. And in terms of footy, you're right. The Vanuatu crew were just about ready to really take some good steps forward, and then COVID shut down for a little bit, and we're about to start our season on the 18th in Nauru, and they're currently in lockdown. So, you know, their football season is postponed for a little bit, and it's certainly been a challenge. But what has happened is it's been a really good opportunity to reset, set some really good protocols, and do a lot of education and training with the in-country staff. And now they're starting to come back to life and run some really quality programs, and probably got another 6 months of just getting back to what we were pre-COVID. But I'm very confident we've got some wonderful people and some wonderful teams involved in our game across the Pacific, and they do a tremendous job.
The International Cup has been a victim of COVID too, and it's been pushed back until next year. Now, it was originally scheduled for 2021. Bearing in mind all the difficulties that have existed over the last couple of years and the impact that it's had on development programs, where do you see the game being at when the International Cup finally comes around as far as the Pacific teams are concerned?
It's a hard one because everyone's had their challenges and everyone's returning at different stages and at different levels. So the International Cup, it's a really important event and it's a wonderful event. It's important that we're able to have as many teams and as many countries represented as possible and give everybody the best chance to arrive. So I think postponing it for a further 12 months, it just gives everyone a little bit of time to get back to their programs. It gives an extra 12 months to fundraise and to support the community programs and everything and find your players and get back to community football. So yeah, a better selection process for everyone, better fundraising efforts, and get your planning right for the countries to arrive. And it'll allow us to do the same thing in preparing for the event as well. So I think the extra 12 months helps. Some countries are probably ready to arrive in 22, but I think postponing it the extra 12 months is probably a good result for everyone across the board.
That's Ben Drew. He's the AFL Development Officer for the Pacific.
Pacific Beat.
Now, it must be the longest exile in sporting history. The New Zealand Warriors have been marooned in Australia for well over 2 years and haven't played in front of their own fans in South Auckland for over 1,000 days. But the squad is back on home soil at last, and on Sunday, a packed house is expected when they take to the Mount Smart pitch once again. And by way of a double celebration, Samoan international prop Bunty Afour will be playing his 100th NRL match as he and teammates mark the end of a prolonged period in COVID isolation that they thought at times would never be over.
Afour crashes over. Bunty Afour is in. And this time it's the Warriors who just crashed their way through the middle.
Afour's been inspiration on the second half.
You know, there was a couple of times where we were supposed to come home earlier, but, you know, keep getting pushed back due to the COVID and restrictions. But, you know, it's finally good to be back home. And, you know, a lot of the boys are excited and just feeling happy.
How much difference do you think it has made to not just the way the team has performed, but the way you've been able to live together as a team in a way which clearly you wouldn't normally do?
To be honest, it actually does kind of play a big part because a lot of the boys, our families are based in New Zealand and they've grown up with their families and their support. So in the hard times, the, you know, your family are always the ones to cheer you up. But being based in Australia has been tough. You know, a lot of the young ones don't have their families to fall on, or, you know, that little bit of support and love. But it's just great to be home where, you know, you kind of have a good vibe and good feeling where, you know, you want to play for your country and the jersey.
And I'm presuming that it's got tougher more recently because, of course, at the beginning of all this, you were in a bubble and most of the teams in the NRL were some distance away from home, not as far as you guys, clearly, but they were still away from home. But once the bubble ended, you were the only ones, so you must have felt very isolated.
Yeah, yeah, it actually was. But, you know, we're a tight group. You know, this club is a great club that, you know, we're all one family and, you know, we have a great culture, you know, in place in us. And, you know, we all looked after one another when we were in that bubble. So, yeah, it was all good.
And I'm told the tickets are selling pretty fast for the game at Mount Smart. So there's a good chance it will be a full house or close to it. That's the perfect incentive to try and get your NRL season back on track, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, it is. You know, it just shows our fans have backed us all the way, even through the tough times. And, you know, they've kept the faith in us. And it's up to us boys to believe in ourselves and try and change the momentum of how our season's going. And better way is it just to start from here at home game and get a roll on.
And just a week ago, of course, you were turning out for Toa Samoa in the international over Cook Islands. And you won that game pretty convincingly after a run when the Samoan team hadn't done so well. So looking ahead to the World Cup, you must must be pretty excited about what Samoa could do.
I'm backing Samoa 100% all the way. You know, we had a lot of Origin boys that were playing in New South Wales and Queensland, and then we had a couple of them playing in the Kiwis game. So it shows we've got a lot of depth and a lot of experience around the international games. And, you know, I'm just hoping that a lot of them pledge their allegiance to Samoa. But it is what it is. If they don't, you know, we've got a lot of young talent coming through.
There's been a bit of a debate over the scheduling of the Pacific Test, because just as you've had the problems of being away from home with the Warriors for so long, another knock-on effect was the cancellation of the Pacific Tests over a couple of years, and now there's going to be a separate window in October at the end of the season. As a player, what do you think about that? Are you happy with where the games are being played mid-season, or would you prefer it to be in its own window?
I'd rather play mid-season. It just brings a better atmosphere, to be honest. You know, when you have the Origin on and then you have international round, the game just grows, because a lot of kids are just watching for more sports, and a lot of Union boys are into the international rounds and Origin. So it'll be sad if they cancel it. You know, a lot of Polynesian kids out there, you know, want to represent their country in that, and, you know, if they do stop it, we're a bit disappointed, so yeah.
But it's been pointed out by the NRL's CEO that by having it in the October window, that the guys that you didn't have access to last week who were playing in Origin will be able to play for Toa Samoa. So that's an advantage, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. But, you know, at the same time, you want other kids to have a chance to play for their country. You know, you got a lot of Origin boys that will come in and will push a lot of the young ones out. But in the international round, you know, you got a lot of the kids will share their talent and try and push for spots in the World Cup.
Do you do a bit of lobbying yourself around the traps in the NRL for players you know who are eligible to play for Samoa but haven't committed yet?
Nah. It's up to them. You know, if they're willing and want to, then, you know, I'm happy for them. But I'm all good. As long as I'm willing to play for Samoa, then that's all that matters to me.
And just to come back to your return as a Warrior to Mount Smart, you'll be up against West Tigers. I suspect when you run out onto the field this weekend, it's going to be a special moment for all of you, isn't it? Bit of a spine-tingling moment.
Yeah, it is. Half of our team have never played at Mount Smart. And I always tell the boys that, you know, it's a different atmosphere. You know, our crowd always gets behind us. And you know, I'm just excited to go out there on Sunday and put on a good performance for our fans and our sponsors and our families.
Bantia Fur will make his 100th appearance for the New Zealand Warriors in the team's homecoming game against West Tigers on Sunday. He was on the line there from Auckland.
You're listening to Pacific Beat.
Richard Hewitt with you for a Friday morning. Now, there have been a few horror stories in recent years involving rugby union players from the Pacific who've accepted contracts to play overseas, and things have gone badly wrong for them. In the very worst examples, there have been cases where players felt so abandoned they took their own lives. But the chance for a talented Pacific player to head overseas is all too tempting, not least for the financial rewards. Right now, an online organisation called the Rugby Agents is advertising for players to join clubs in the United States, Spain and Romania, amongst others. So what are these clubs looking for? A touch of overseas glamour or a diamond in the rough, perhaps? And what protections are in place for those Pacific players who decide to make the trip? Questions for Jamie Simpson, who's a director with the Rugby Agents.
Every club likes the idea of bringing an overseas player in. It may be that they're just short of a singular position. So it could be that they just want someone to run the line out as a second row. So if I can get a tight head from overseas and they just want to travel and play rugby, it may be that they fit with the needs of a club in England. It may just be they're just happy to bring a player across because it's quite good for the culture of the club. So having a player that comes across and has different ideas about training and the lifestyle and how to play rugby, and sometimes the skills that are transferred from an overseas player can be useful for a rugby club. So it might be the ball handling drills or the way that you prepare for a game or after game. So there's a few different bows to kind of an overseas player coming over to England or any other country.
Players from the Pacific seem to feature pretty much all over the world these days. Just about every national side has got two or three players in it who have Pacific heritage. Do you get clubs coming to you and they say, we'd like a Pacific player, we're looking for that flair player?
Clubs generally are open to players from any kind of background if they're of a level equivalent to what they're looking for. If you want a big ball carrying 12, for example, it may be that some of those Pacific players just fit that mould a bit better than a European player. That tends to be the way that sometimes there's certain positions which Pacific players just tend to be in a certain mould, and that mould may be what that particular club are looking for. But I wouldn't say clubs say, I want a Kiwi or I want an Aussie or I want a Fijian. It just tends to be, these are the attributes we're looking for. It can be a player from outside of that country. What have you got?
What sort of safeguards are there in place? Because we hear often stories of Pacific players who have hit the rocks when they've gone overseas. They've been left high and dry. They haven't been paid what they're told they were going to be paid. And culturally, people haven't understood them. So is that something that, as an agent, you can deal with and ensure that these players don't run into trouble?
Yeah, I think it's part of the course as an agent to be mindful of those situations. And what you tend to find is if, for example, a Fijian, there's generally someone at a club with some kind of Fijian background, in my experience anyway. So when you're trying to place a Fijian player, it's important that in terms of safeguarding, the checks that we do are making sure that all the references are accurate. Obviously, we speak to the player directly. And to be honest, these days, there's no real hiding place with the internet. So if he says that he plays for a certain club, obviously you can search that and make sure that that's accurate. All their footage, you can make sure that the person that you're seeing looking like they're the best player on the pitch, you're going to make sure that that's the same name as you've been given. All those kind of things are obviously important. And then once you speak to the club, it's important that someone from the club speaks to that individual specifically. And if it's a Fijian, then it makes sense for him to speak to a Fijian at that club, to someone from their own background. They can discuss what the club's like and all the questions they want to ask, they can ask directly to that person rather than feeling, oh, I'm not sure if I can ask that question to the head coach or the president at the club. And to be honest, it's better from an agent point of view to be brutally honest about where they're going than to try and glam up where they're going and then once they realise, then wanting to come home. Because as an agent, there's no benefit to you exaggerating the level of a club or the accommodation or the package that they're getting.
Do you deal exclusively with the player and presumably if it's a younger player, maybe with parents or family as well? Or do you also deal with the players' unions? Because, of course, particularly in the Pacific, that the unions like to know what's happening to their players and they get a bit twitchy if they don't and players go overseas without permission.
The younger players, we'd certainly speak to their parents. Generally, they want their parents to be involved in that process because they've got to discuss it with them. So it's easier just to have them all on a Zoom call or something similar or just a phone call and ask questions as and when. I haven't had a situation where a union has wanted to speak to me about a player, but if they did, it wouldn't be an issue. It's just generally they don't tend to get involved in those scenarios unless it's obviously a national player whose coach wants to discuss where he's going and why he's going, which again, we would be happy to discuss those issues if they came up.
And just to point out, I mean, that there is potential here for, I would suggest, players who are right up to and just below the elite level to make an international move. Would that be fair?
Yeah, definitely, yeah. There's no real restrictions and it's just understanding, I suppose, the level that they're playing at and then finding an equivalent kind of standard for them to play overseas where they're going to be challenge but also develop their skills at the same time.
It's Jamie Simpson, director of the web-based recruitment agency The Rugby Agents, on the line from England.
Catch an NRL double header this Sunday on ABC Radio Australia.
Pass to Matt Bna, steps in, field beats one, scores.
Tune in at 2 p.m. PNG time to catch the Warriors versus the Tigers. Then at 4 p.m., the Dragons tackle the Raiders.
Frawley's through, he's up to the 20, still going Frawley. A remarkable try here to Frawley, scores!
ABC Radio Australia, your home of rugby league in the Pacific.
Yeah, it's going to be a big day for the Warriors. So we were talking earlier about their homecoming after more than 2 years in exile over here in Australia. Now on Pacific Beats, a Friday morning sporting edition, time to talk through some of the sporting issues of the week with sports writer and social media forum moderator at Tia Rocco. Welcome, Tia. Good morning once again.
Pacific greetings, Richard van Arnhemland. It's been a minute since we last touched base.
It has, and there's been a fair bit going on, and there's the long-running saga now of the Kaibiti Silk Tails, the Fijian Rugby League side based over here currently in Australia, and their fallout with the FNRL, the Fiji NRL. Essentially, the FNRL still not officially recognising the Silk Tails after their memorandum of understanding was effectively torn up. There was a big meeting, I gather, during the Pacific Test round last weekend between the two sides, the NRL and also the International Rugby League. But from what I can gather, there's still a big problem.
Well, Richard, since the Pacific Test, we hear that the discussions are now put on hold until further discussions are held in the latter part of the year. And I think that's probably a good thing, where people, both sides of the camp, can go away and kind of do a bit of navel gazing after the Pacific Test. And I think there's a lot to be discussed. And yes, and there has been, you know, quite a bit of sad news happening on the Kaibiti Silk Tails end, which has set the team back quite a bit. And then, you know, with the loss of Fiji to the PNG Coolmores, which we'll discuss later on, you know, that has been also a setback as well for FNRL. So a lot of navel gazing to do on both sides.
You mentioned the sad news, and we should certainly address that. This is the sudden death of Jackie Shannon, who was the Silktails general manager, well-known figure in Fijian rugby league circles, has managed the women's national team. I know that her death has devastated the Silktails camp. I mean, she was the auntie in the camp, effectively.
Yes, Richard, we heard the sudden and devastating passing of the mothership, actually, for the KBT Silktails team, Jackie Shannon. So Jackie is survived by her daughter, Linda, who currently lives in Fiji. When we talk about Jackie, she holds a critical piece of history when it comes to supporting rugby union and rugby league in Fiji. So her and her daughter are formidable women who I think had a much greater role to play behind the scenes. When we talk about women and their contribution to rugby league in the Pacific region, Richard, we include Jackie in the script. She was a gentle soul, and I couldn't think of any person more suited to the roles. And in previous years, Jackie has been the manager to a lot of local competitions in Fiji, including the international competition with the Fiji Rugby League Mbulikula women's team making their debut. I believe it was in 2019. And, you know, the previous late chairperson, Penny Musinamasi, who is one of the fathers of rugby league in Fiji, identified Jackie early in the piece as a leader within her own right. And she had certainly a way of handling things in the background, which had always chipping away in a world full of, you know, the rugby league fraternity, which can be rather masculine in their approach. And she had some amazing ideas on how to run the rugby league and in Fiji, and Jackie always had insight into the way that things ought to be run with her quiet insight and wisdom. So we remember her, and of course we think of Linda as a formidable force in the western part of Fiji in particular, always creating opportunities and pathways for young men and women who are often drawn to Jackie's nurturing spirit. Now, the Silktails are missing a big part of their team. Essentially, she was their mother away from home. So it's a real setback for the team in their second season of the New South Wales Rugby League Ron Maisie competition. And in particular, Petrol has come out to say that Jackie was the backbone of the club, playing an integral part in the establishment of the KBT Silktails from its inception in 2020 to its current form today. And, you know, he essentially said that they would not be the club that they are today if it was not for her guidance, perseverance and passion to see our young Fijian players realise the potential and achieve their rugby league dreams and aspirations. So our condolences to Jackie's family and the KBT Silktails team, Richard.
I wonder, Terry, if Jackie Shannon's passing might have something of a galvanising effect with the split that currently exists between the team and the FNRL. Maybe one or two people might think, well, actually, maybe there's one or two things that are more important than rugby league, and maybe we should sort this out and then to continue to bicker.
Yes, it's definitely something that needs to be addressed, Richard, and it's something that, if anything, it's an indication, you know, that things need to be discussed and things need to be addressed in moving the game forward, in particular for the Fiji end. It's important that they work together, and, yeah, it's very important for them to do that, Richard.
I think it was the question was asked of the Bhatti's coach, of course, after the test match last weekend when they went down to Papua New Guinea. He was asked about the silk tails and whether or not the team could have benefited from having one or two of them in the lineup. And he basically said, well, that's not my problem. That's the FNRL. And of course, other people might beg to differ on that one. But whilst we're talking about those Pacific Rugby League tests, as far as we know, it will be the last time that they're played mid-season. There'll be a switch to an October window from 2023. Seems to be a divided opinion on that. A lot of the players quite happy to play mid-season and see the young players get a chance while the big boys are playing Origin. What do you think? Is it a good move or not?
Well, look, Richard, you know, judging from what happened that amazing weekend, I mean, what a weekend of tantalising rugby league that was. We can all agree on that. You know, not only the Pacific Test, but also the State of Origin. So, yes, it is a wrap-up for the Pacific Test as we go into the Rugby League World Cup. But some of the things that we, you know, people have come out to kind of address is especially, you know, Wayne Bennett came out the weekend after the Pacific Test saying that, you know, he called on the NRL to reconsider dropping the Pacific Test. But, yeah, it was an amazing weekend. I mean, if anything, the NRL should, you know, look at continuing this on a more regular basis. Because we see how faith, culture and sport go hand in hand, especially when teams are representing their country. And what a great demonstration of nationalism. And it's so very Pacific, you know, the richness of our culture being put on the world stage and producing some of the most moving moments of the game, Richard.
I think it's important to stress, though, that the Pacific Tests, they're not disappearing. You know, they will move to later in the year. And Andrew Abdo, the CEO of the NRL, I mean, he suggested that this could be a good thing because it means that there won't be the clash with Origin that we had this year, so teams can have their strongest possible sides. And Australia could be involved, which clearly they're not going to be in the middle of Origin. That's never going to happen. So if you put it in a separate window, we might see Australia getting involved in the Pacific Tests, which would surely be desirable for all the Pacific Nations.
Yes, it certainly makes sense. I mean, there's a lot of catch-up rugby league, international rugby league, especially after what happened with COVID. I mean, and you see the attendance, it reflects in the attendance over that weekend. I mean, look at Mount Smart Stadium. I mean, you know, a clash between Australia and the Pacific Nations is surely to draw a lot of people to the games. I mean, tickets were sold out before the game, and how beautiful it was to witness that spectacular sea of Pacific people, Tonga, Samoa, Cook Islands and Fiji, turn up to the games, even in the cold, wintry parts of Sydney.
And just a word on Rugby Union, the Pacific Nations Cup this weekend. The Tongan side, they're going to have Israel Folau, they're going to have Charles Pietau, they're going to have Malachi Fekitoa lining up in the backs. I mean, that's a pretty delicious prospect for a Rugby Union fan to see those three guys running around in a Tongan jumper.
Oh, can I just say, Richard, that the next month is going to be an amazing month for you know, Fijians in Suva and Lotoka, as spectators get to see some of the Pacific's best go head-to-head in the Pacific Nations Cup. I think we should have all booked our holidays to Fiji, Richard. You know, it's going to be an amazing competition to be held in Fiji. And, you know, up here in Arnhem Land, we often talk about connection to country and, you know, that's about being wholesome and who you are and who you represent and your identity. And so when you represent your country, you know, you find your mana and power in wearing the jersey with pride, and it's who you are, your identity. And it's been a long time coming for Pacific players. So there's been a shift, you know, that has happened. As we all know, we've got three former All Blacks and a former Wallaby making their debut for Tonga in the Pacific Nations Cup and coming up against the Fijians. And this all comes down to the, you know, following the changes in the electricity.
Sorry, we're gonna have to stop it there. My apologies, we're running out of time. But yes, you're right. It's going to be a great month in Fiji with the Pacific Nations Cup unfolding. Thank you so much for joining us on the program. We'll touch base again same time next week. That rounds out this edition of Pacific Beat. I'm Richard Hewitt. Thanks for your company. Have a great weekend.